Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patty LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
So, have you ever heard of Peter Serafinowicz?
Peter, there was an old man named Peter Serafinowicz, had a nickname on his chinowitz. Plucked it off, but it grew in a wits. Poor old Peter Serafinowicz begin in wits.
Please tell me that was just a riff.
No, it's totally a song. You've never heard the song Michael Finnegan? I guess it's probably a little offensive for people from Scotland. It's an old rhyme. There was an old man named Michael Finnegan.
But you did riff on the Peter Serafinowicz.
Yeah, that I did. Yeah,
that was so impressive.
Thank you.
Have you been to improv class?
I try. Friends don't let friends do improv. You should know this.
Fair.
We have a service for if do you have friends who are interested in improv? They say to you, hey, you want to come see my improv show? It's at 10 a.m. We're the fifth act to go on. It's $7 to get in, but your first drink is free. You should call our phone number. It's 1-800-NO-BUT. Friends don't let friends do improv.
That's funny.
Welcome to Jim and Tomic's Musical Theatre Happy Hour, your weekly podcast with shots and shanties.
Do you think there are listeners out there who develop drinking games to our podcast and do shots?
What, do whatever we say?
Like, whenever I say, let's ride there on my Segway. I don't know.
Or wherever I say...
whenever you
see,
say,
do you know what? Every time I edit these podcasts, I was like, God, I say that so much. And then when it comes to actually thinking about what do I say, I can never remember.
Whenever you make up an obscure UK word to fool me into thinking it's real,
precisely. Also, a question: are there any shanties other than sea shanties?
Yes. I only learned this recently because I found a new subreddit. I think it's called R Shanties. This is an actual
dark side of Reddit.
This is an actual thing that happened to me recently. It's not called shanties. I'm looking for sea shanties. Thanks, our shanties. It's our sea shanties. There are also, Jimmy, did you know this, space shanties?
Of course, shanties in space.
Including one of my favorites, which we should absolutely remember to put in the show notes, called Carmen Miranda's Ghost.
Okay.
Which I never thought I would have a chance to include in this podcast. Yeah, it's like Carmen Miranda's ghost is haunting space pod number 9. It's really weird, but the free fruit is awesome is the thesis of the song.
Okie dokie. What, so not only just space, but ghosts in space.
Ghosts in space, yeah. And the idea of a space shanty is like, there's a sci-fi future where we sail around in spaceships the same way we sailed around in boats in sea ships. And so, of course, space shanties obviously would develop. So long story short, yes, I think there are other kinds of shanties.
Excellent. Well, maybe one day we'll do the space shanty musical. Also, just as a note, we teased it last week. We're going to do it this week. Hey, hey, hey. So stay tuned till the end of the podcast, which you all do anyway, for our Reddit rundown.
Yeah, we're going to talk about some of your comments from Heather's last week.
Exactly. Look at us go.
Let's get into it. What are you drinking today, Jimmy?
I am drinking some seawater. What are you drinking?
This right here? Why, this is the very bottle of a Perrier that's mineral.
Beautiful. Well done. How long were you working that one
years.
Out?
Years. Years and years and years.
It's been years in the making.
And I don't think it's even original. I think I heard it somewhere else.
Well, I liked it. I hadn't heard it before. Why are we waffling on about this, sir?
It has to do with our quiz question last week. One of the most popular songs from this quote-unquote musical has been parodied in every context. It will help you learn about the chemical elements, nations of the world, and even college majors. What is the musical? Pirates of Penzance!
The Pirates of Penzance!
Specifically, which I'm sure we'll talk about in more detail later, but the Major General song, which even if you haven't heard it, you've absolutely heard it.
Yeah, exactly. You know it. You pretty much know it off by heart.
Yeah, it's, you know, Daniel Radcliffe sings the Elements song set to the melody of Modern Major General at parties as a parlor trick.
Yeah. That's the reason why.
That's the reason, because you're all Daniel Radcliffe fans. No, it's in Animaniacs. It's like, yeah. I am the very model of a cartoon individual. There was a very popular viral video maybe a couple years ago about Barack Obama. I am the very model of a something president. You know, it's everywhere. You've absolutely heard it before.
And it came from our first Gilbert and Sullivan musical that we are talking about.
I think we are treading dangerous waters here, Jimmy.
I know. We're going out to the deadlands.
Well, there are people who, like, talking about Arthur Sullivan and William Gilbert are like their life's work.
Exactly.
And we're never going to be as smart as them.
No, absolutely not. Caveat right at the start. Yeah, so I, when I was in Edinburgh, I was a member of the Edinburgh University Savoy Opera Group, which was our Gilbert and Sullivan Society. They also did musicals as well, but that was the principally we did that. And at the 50th anniversary gala that we had, it was amazing. We got all these speakers, and it was basically just a room full of GNS heads, and it's so amazing, because, like, I feel like the passion that we have for musical theater purely equates the passion that they have for these operas. Like, the fan following, like, you know, we talk about Heathers and we talk about Corn Nuts, like, the fan following for Gilbert and Sullivan is just something else. It's everywhere, and it's huge and extremely loyal.
My first encounter with the Gilbert and Sullivan fan following was back in my days of heading up Wiki Project Musical Theater, tasked with editing Wikipedia pages about musical theater. And we got into quite an internet scuffle with Wiki Project Gilbert and Sullivan about who had purview over which articles. And there's some passionate internet people out there.
USOG, as we call it, they haven't always done musicals, obviously, because it's been going for 50 years. When they started to do musical theatre, and obviously with the current climate of people just knowing musical theatre more and preferring musical theatre, there's kind of been a shift in what's the priority. And, like, over the past kind of like 4 or 5 years, it's a heavy debate about, you know, what it is, which is the true thing, which is the thing that's important, you know, what do we call ourselves, blah, 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 blah. It's fascinating, the kind of dichotomy.
There you go, it's a word. And take a shot, we'll probably talk about it later.
Absolutely.
But so, Pirates of Penzance premiered in 1879. I think this is now the earliest show we've talked about.
It is indeed.
This will probably be, unless we cover another Gilbert and Sullivan, but I can't imagine we'll cover Pinafore or something. Who knows? Maybe. Jim and
Well,
Tom,
hey, we could be here
for,
exactly yeah. when we're on episode 506. Yeah, exactly. Like, we'll need to.
But like, we're so far at the genesis, but it premiered just at the end of 1879 in New York, and it had like a triple premiere.
Yeah, exactly. It's the start of Gina, and we'll get into this in a little minute. There we go already. But the start of Pirates of Penzance was so kind of fraught.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots that went with it. So yeah, we were the UK, we were in the US, mm-hmm. Different versions. Like it was a mad opening.
And Gilbert and Sullivan were, I would say, known. You know, like this, like it was, we're going to see the next Gilbert and Sullivan operetta, but Absolutely. This one, you know, reviews very much said, like, this is, they made severe leaps and bounds in their own stylistic choices in creating Pirates of Penzance.
Mm-hmm. Totally. And this was the first of the operas to be premiered stateside, and there mm-hmm. are reasons for that, which mm-hmm. again, we'll get into. But kind of after its initial success, I think it ran, certainly in the UK, it ran for like 400 odd performances. Mm-hmm.
Which is huge at that time.
Exactly. At that time, that is massive. And then it was only a couple of years later then it got revived mm-hmm. in the Savoy Theatre, where, and I think through Doyley Carte, the Gilbert and Sullivan, the main kind of Gilbert and Sullivan production company, mm-hmm. it was never off their touring books until they closed.
It immediately started, like, I think, three tours stateside. Like, it, you know, and that's, at this time, turn of the last century, that's one of the fastest moving ways to get a piece of art out there.
Totally.
You know,
totally.
We're probably pre-radio, certainly pre-television, you know, we're definitely in silent movie land.
We're still, so, I mean, this is the Victorian era, like.
Yeah. Like, crazy for something to become so wildly popular.
Across continents, do you know what I mean? Not even just within the UK, it's across the continent.
Yeah, like, take that, Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Yeah, exactly. You think you're the machine? We're doing.
Yeah, exactly.
Please. So, let's talk a little bit about what Pirates actually is. What's going on in this?
Oh,
Merry
man.
Little farce. What ain't going on, right?
Right. This is a ridiculous show. By contemporary standards, the plot of this show is ridiculous.
Absolutely. And it's, do you know what? That's kind of interesting in itself, because, like, where do we talk about it from?
Right.
Do you know
because
what I mean?
It is ostensibly contemporaneous, right?
Yes.
The idea is that it is written about the late 1870s, early 1880s in that time.
Yes.
We're not talking about, you know, the 1810s or the 1700s.
Exactly.
But a lot of the plot revolves around how ridiculous it would be if there were a contemporary, still living band of pirates in the 1880s.
Yes.
And so it's like self-dating itself through parody. Kind of?
Totally, totally. And that, you know, that kind of calls into some of the genius of these guys, is that they really knew how to kind of subvert genre.
Yeah.
Like, really, really well. So we're in Penzance,
mm-hmm.
which is
in England, I recently learned.
Where did you think it was? I think it was like Africa.
I thought it was in Australia for several years. Which
is it because it's got a Z in it?
We don't need to dwell on my stupidity.
It's because it has a Z in it, doesn't it?
It's because I thought Englishmen were more intelligent than the people portrayed in this musical.
I see.
Australia was later in development. Sorry, Australian listeners. I don't know. Something seemed more like Australian frontier than it seemed like developed England countryside.
Okay, that's, I mean, I can totally accept that.
But
I
it's
can,
just,
I
it's
see.
Just wrong. I had just been wrong in my mind for like decades about this show.
Right, there you go. So we're in, but we're in the south. I mean, you know, South England. That's
might
hot
as
as
well
everything.
Be Australia.
Yeah, that's like, what, 24 degrees Celsius? Woo, man. I don't know whatever that is in Fahrenheit, but who cares?
Right, you can Google the conversion.
Yeah. So here we have a band of merry pirates who are led by the Pirate King.
He is the Pirate King.
Yep. I'm just going to say I've been in this and I played the Pirate King.
No effing way.
Absolutely.
Really? That's
is it
amazing.
The best role I've ever played on a stage? Yeah, potentially. Like,
that's pretty awesome.
Exactly.
I would never... Take no offense, I would never have typecast you as the Pirate King, but I would have really much enjoyed seeing you as the Pirate King.
Well, maybe if everyone's lucky, I'll upload some video footage of that, including one of the best theatrical blunders and most successful theatrical blunders ever to have existed. And
better
I will stand by that.
Better than breaking Milky White's leg off in that infamous... Have you seen? Oh, it's amazing.
It's
She'll
so
be
good.
Fine.
It's so good. Yes, better than that, because it's musical. I do it musically. I communicate with an orchestra with my eyes.
I'm very excited.
Thank you. But no, it was really good fun. So I feel like I know this quite well in terms of the plot.
Yeah.
I should do
so,
it.
So the Pirate King leads a merry band of buccaneers,
yep.
Including Frederick.
Young Frederick.
Our protagonist.
Mm-hmm. So it must be said as well, these guys are all orphans. Very
yes.
important. So, basically, Frederick was kind of taken in by these pirates as an apprentice.
As a mistake.
As a complete mistake, oh my goodness, because he wanted to be apprenticed to a pilot.
And his nanny, Angela Lansbury, in my mind, forever and ever and ever.
Yeah.
Was hard of hearing, and instead of hearing pilot, heard pirate. And they have to be really keen on the pronunciation there. And, you know, the rest is history. But it's his,
exactly.
what, it's his 18th birthday?
So, yes.
And he's free of his indentured servitude, which is caused for some dismay because he's leaving the pirate call and is called to a duty to exterminating his very kin in the future.
Exactly. And he's very caught up about it. And as
so,
you would be.
This is where I think it's worth pausing for a second to talk about genre, because, again, by contemporary musical theater terms, like, two songs in, we're already in ridiculous territory.
Absolutely.
And that's part of the existence of this, is that it's supposed to be, like, a happy, clean jaunt. You know, this show is an escape. There's
yes.
a little bit of parody and a little bit of satire that might be construed as political or socio-political commentary.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, this is a ridiculous, almost absurdist escape.
Completely. Completely. To the point where it's kind of like pantomime.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? We talked about pantomime back in Christmas of last year. And... yeah, I feel like this is a great example of what pantomime could be. It's not pantomime.
It's not pantomime.
But it
you
has
can,
elements of pantomime.
You can see the, and I'm not well versed on the interplay of the history between the two, but you can see whatever influences pantomime in this.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. Uh-huh. I see what you mean. Yes. Uh-huh. So, yeah, Frederick's an estate. And then... all of a sudden, here comes some lovely young girls. Hooray. So a big bunch of sisters come over the hills to enjoy the sights of Penzance.
Which is always my favorite when you look up amateur and high school productions of this, when it's like a chorus of like 100 girls.
Absolutely.
Who might as well be sisters.
Yeah, Major General Stanley got midday. And Frederick meets them, and they're terrified because he's a man and they've got their ankles out.
A man!
I know. but, of course, frisky young Mabel among them is kind of enchanted by Frederick.
But wait, the pirates land. And
no.
they endeavor to wed all the women against their will.
Grr, but
what? Well, but like, hold on, pirates pillage, rape, and kill. Pirates, you know, are mean, awful human beings. Not these pirates.
Not the pirates of Penzance.
No, they intend to wed against their will. I always
exactly.
It's all, like, this is probably as close as to like deep hashtag trademark Jim and Tomic talk we can ever get with this kind of show. But like, what the rampant kissing fest that sometimes happens in productions of these things where the pirates intend to wed these women against their will for all of 10 seconds.
Yep.
Whoo!
It's heavy stuff.
Talk we'll about put, thin, thinly
there'll be
veiled.
A helpline. There'll be a helpline in the show notes if any if of you, these issues.
If you have ever been a major general's daughter who has been inadvertently kissed by a pirate, there is help there.
There is. We're not quite sure where it is, but it will be somewhere. And then, their
Major
father
Stanley
comes
shows
in.
Up. He is for the same entrance as the Pirate King. That's the same song as the Pirate King's song. He is a major general. He is a major general.
Reprise, if you will.
Yes.
You know?
He sings probably the most popular song in the show.
He does indeed, the one that we've already talked about. And then he finds out that they're all orphans.
And then a little bit of Abbott and Costello wordplay happens.
Orphan. And then it's the end of the act.
Right. And then, to be entirely honest with you, Jimmy, that is where generally I stop watching or listening to this show.
That's a shame because you're missing some hits.
I'm missing some hits, but I don't think I'm missing a lot of plot.
Well, no, to be honest, that's where most of the plot happens, isn't Act 2? Really, yeah. Act 1 is just a big bunch of introductions, but Act 2 is where the twists and turns occur.
Can you call them twists and turns?
I absolutely can.
But, okay.
Yeah.
I'll let you defend them.
Okie dokie. So basically, now that Frederick has obviously fallen for Mabel and they're going to get married, he feels this sense of duty, very important, to Major General Stanley, who, again, wants to fight against the pirates.
Mm-hmm. But is very distraught at how much he lied about being an orphan to escape from them, because he is not. Dun, dun, dun.
Exactly. Oh my gosh.
But then, to complicate the plot further, the Pirate King and Mabel...
Ruth.
The Pirate King and Ruth, who in the Angela Lansbury version is inexplicably in a much more flattering costume, arrive to tell Frederick of a most inconvenient paradox, I would say. I need to tell you, I described to my boyfriend that this musical, quote unquote, has sung laughs in it, like harmonized sung laughs in it.
Right, okay.
And he did not understand, and it took several minutes of explaining that, like, ha 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 ha, paradox is like a thing in this show.
Yeah. It's good, it's hard.
It's real, I'm sure.
It's someone who's sung it. So let's see if I can remember the whole recit. Okay. So this is the twist. This is a twist in the tale, guys. So for some ridiculous reason, to which, however, I have no desire to be disloyal, some person in authority, I have no idea who, very likely the Astronomer Royal, has decided that for such a beastly month as February, 28 days as a rule are plenty. 1 year in every four, his days shall be reckoned with 9 and 20. And through some singular coincidence, I wouldn't be surprised if it were owing to the agency of an ill-natured fairy. You are a victim of this clumsy arrangement, having been born in leap year on the 29th of February. And through some simple arithmetical process, you will easily discover... that though you've been alive 21 years, you were only 5 and a little bit over. I think I missed a line there.
It sounds pretty close to my
something about
of
agency
it.
Of an ill-natured fairy, which is...
See, I will say, despite how accurate or inaccurate that may have been,
yeah,
that is what I enjoy about predictable rhyme that I mm-hmm. think Gilbert and Sullivan pioneered, and I see rear its ugly head now and again. Like, I will be the first to critique predictable rhyme sometimes, but in context... in a show like this, it helps with understanding, mm-hmm. you know, and like the plot's so ridiculous, you need to understand it a little bit to get the comedy and the humor of it. Otherwise, it's just it's like a gentle absurdity that washes over you and doesn't affect you in any particular way.
Yeah.
And so like, what rhymes with 20?
Plenty, his days shall be reckoned. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
28 days as a rule are plenty. 1 year in every 4 his days shall be reckoned with 9 and 20.
Right. And so, like, you're... I, in my mind, hear 20 before 20 is sung. And
okay.
I listened to this too early in my musical analysis days to know if that happened the first time.
Right.
But it's one that I can consider... you know, there's a good chance you figured it out. And like the rest of the rhymes in this one too. And also I think kind of throughout this musical in some pretty key areas. Because of context, I don't, you know, I won't get my much lauded City of Angels hat out. and I don't know, much critiqued City of Angels hat out. Like it's appropriate in this context.
Yeah. Well, I just also feel that these guys birthed witty rhymes.
Right, yeah.
So you can't question them.
It seems witty over lazy, even though it's predictable. Like, they set you up... It's always... I'm going to go on a tangent here, and who knows if this will make the edit. But have
probably
I talked
won't.
About
We're
my...
We're at 45 minutes already.
Right, exactly. my philosophy of murder mystery television shows. There's like two kinds of murder mystery television shows. Uh-huh. There's the ones where you know who did it and you follow the investigator trying to figure it out,
uh-huh.
Like Columbo. And there's the ones where you don't know who did it and you follow the investigator actually figuring it out.
Murder, She Wrote.
Murder, She Wrote, in context with the investigator. Mm-hmm. And, or take a more contemporary example, Sherlock. Mm-hmm. The best murder mysteries let you figure it out just before the character on screen figures it out.
Uh-huh.
Like, we're talking seconds here. But it lets you feel smart, and it lets you feel accomplished and clever, because you're picking up on the same clues that they're letting them pick up on, mm-hmm. just a little bit faster. Mm-hmm. And so you get that satisfaction of like, oh, I figured it out. You don't mm-hmm. figure it out so early that like half of the plot is really irrelevant because you're yelling at the screen like, it was the maid! Mm-hmm. But instead you figure it out just before them. It's the same way I feel with these predictable rhymes. Like, you get the rhyme in your mind a split second before the person says it, and uh-huh. it lets you feel the same cleverness that the author does in creating the rhyme, and sometimes the characters do in creating the rhyme, because like these sort of characters take pleasure in their wittiness.
Yes. Do you know one of my favorite things, this probably won't uh-huh. make it, but I do just want to tell you, uh-huh. is Sondheim does it a lot, and I've yet to find other examples where he plays on that mm-hmm. and then right at the last minute smacks you across the face with a non-rhyme.
Yeah. No,
so
it's totally...
the one that I always go to is in Poor Baby,
mm-hmm.
and it's there's no one where in his life Robert ought to have a woman.
Yeah,
and not
exactly.
wife. Do you know what yeah. I mean? And you're no, just like, oh,
this totally should make it because Gilbert and Sullivan did it first.
Absolutely,
and this is why it's so important, and they call attention to it, and it's because they have this meta. It's funny because they talk about, like, you know, they wanted to be very realistic in their direction, and by contemporary yeah. standards, they're absolutely not. But Modern Major General plays on that conceit
absolutely
whenever he's searching for a rhyme, and yeah. like, it's It's the biggest, most overt punchline of the song. You'll say a better major general has never strategy, which, like, you know, he's trying to find a rhyme for strategy, finds a really obscure one. And then in some contemporary retellings, when they go back and, like, capitalize on the fantastical feat that is singing that patter song, the major general, he sings instead, you'll say a better major general has never rode a horse, and it doesn't rhyme, and it's even funnier.
Exactly.
And it's like so buried in context, like just on its own, it's not funny. Us talking about this is not funny, but in context, right? Like, of course, describing a joke takes the humor out of it, but this one even more, because the context is so important.
Exactly.
And I see that with Paradox. I see that, I know it's not originally written for this, but the whole conceit of the, oh, what's the song? It really doesn't matter.
The Matter song.
The Matter song. Yeah. And then like stupid jokes where they end, you know, in the contemporary writings where it's like, and then they go, what's the matter? It's really funny because the last song was the Matter song.
Exactly.
We should pick up the plot, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So that translating is the crux of the whole show. Basically, the Pirate King and Ruth have discovered that Frederick was born an leap year. So actually he's only 5 years old and not 20.
And is he a pirate or isn't he?
Exactly. Is he still in the... Nobody knows anymore. It's a paradox. and so Frederick is like, oh, well, I'm kind of tied between the two now. What am I to do?
This is where I lose the plot.
Yeah. So, it all gets a bit crazy.
They fight.
Yeah, so
the policemen come.
Exactly. So meanwhile, Madison is something. The Major General is called the police in order to arrest the pirates and sort them out. But unfortunately, the British police force are idiots.
I don't know if this is an American trope or an international trope, but do you know the Keystone Cops? It's absolutely... I experienced the idea of the Keystone Cops before I ever knew what Pirates of Penzance were, and I'm positive the Keystone Cops are taken from Tarantara, constables in Pirates of Penzance. But for American audiences, you know the Keystone Cops, they're parodied in a bunch of Looney Tunes cartoons where it's a, you know, an amorphous blob of officers of the law who are chasing a criminal in a very bumbling way, and like
waving their sticks and,
like they round the corner, and as they round the corner, they have to hop on one foot so they can like make up the momentum to go in one direction. It's like it's a physical comedy staple.
Okay,
of like 100 police officers, you know, and you see it. It is core to the society. I mean, you see Keystone Cops the trope in the Blues Brothers movie.
Yeah.
With, like, all the Chicago police trying to bumblingly chase the Blues Brothers through, you know, a mall in there. Like, that's Keystone Cops. And it starts in Pirates of Penzance. This is where that joke starts. We're seeing the genesis of a meme.
Mm-hmm. So the police are a bit ridiculous and are a bit scared of the old pirates, but, again, feel their own sense of duty and decide to help.
And they take a whole song to exit stage.
Exactly. Away, away. At last we go. Tarantara. So good. and then Frederick kind of says goodbye to Mabel and kind of tells her that, oh, I've got to do this because of my sense of duty. Such a shame. So he joins up with Pirate King and Ruth and the rest of the pirates, and they sneak into the Major's house very loudly. Mm-hmm. There's
a fight scene.
Some brief altercation, exactly.
Brief altercation? Absolutely not.
Hey, the actual fight lasts about 3 bars.
Yeah, and then in every reenactment, it takes up, like, a half of the second act.
What do you mean?
Have you not watched a contemporary recreation of Pirates of Penzance?
I've been in one.
Yeah, there's, like, both in the pirate movie, infamously featured musictheatermash.youtube.whatever, or the Angela Lansbury adaptation. It's like, this is where the swashbuckling happens.
Are you talking about Cat Like Tread?
Oh, you're talking about Cat Like Tread? Sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself.
No, I'm not. I'm talking about With Base Deceit.
This is my difficulty with contemporary recreations of this. The end of Act Two is so
because the altercation, the actual fight, is literally just bum 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 bum. With base deceit, you whipped upon our dealings. With vengeance sweet and dreaded all our dealings.
And then they fight some more in with some recreations. And then they fight some more, and then they fight some more. And then it's like, stop, we've lost Queen Victoria. And then we deus ex machina our way out of the plot.
Well, actually, what happens is Ruth remembers that they're not all pirates. Actually, they're all noblemen. They're all members of the peerage. And they've just gone a bit wrong.
This is where I start losing my patience with this
show. So there you go. Your patience?
Put that away.
DNS puns. and then we're at the end. Look, like, don't look for a happy, fun resolution here.
I mean, it is a happy, fun resolution. It's just absolutely not like, it's not a good, solid resolution. It's not like... It's not like one that they foreshadowed or set up or, like, that makes any sense.
Yeah.
I am the very model of a modern major general. I've information, vegetable, animal, and mineral. I know the kings of England and I quote the fights historical from Marathon to Waterloo in order categorical. I am very well acquainted too with matters mathematical. I understand equations both as simple and quadratical. About binomial theorem, I'm teeming with a lot of news. Lot of news, I've got it. With many cheerful facts about the square of the hypotenuse.
With many cheerful facts about the square of the hypotenuse. With many cheerful facts about the square of the hypotenuse. With many cheerful facts about the square of the hypotenuse.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com.
So here's the thing. I'm sure we're at the end of Jimmy and I rambled on for the plot about far too long, and I'm sure there was a wonderfully cohesive, trimmed-down version of that in the final edition of the podcast. But I think the thing to note is, like, because this plot is lauded in its existence for being so cohesive, but by contemporary standards, it's absolutely not.
Yeah.
Which is why we've talked about it for so long.
Yeah, like there's loads, like you said, Deus Ex Machina there at the end.
There's like six of them.
Exactly. It's kind of like, or tight spot, Deus Ex Machina.
Yeah, but that's, you know, that's...
But that's fine. Do you know,
it's like, part, that it's is part of the form, you know.
Absolutely. You know, writing a musical back in those days was not a simple thing to do that you could just... slot in a couple of songs.
Right. Well, and its existence as an operetta, which we'll talk about maybe if we don't run out of time, was like supposed to be light and fluffy and non-committal and non-dramatic and non-tragic and non-offensive.
Exactly.
And so the alternative in those days was to make something that like is so ridiculous it doesn't matter.
Uh-huh. Yeah, precisely. Precisement. Okay, well, let's... have our first natural seg. We're an hour in. That's fine. Let's have our first natural seg to where does GNS sit in our lovely musical theatre history?
This is something I felt we should have talked about for a long time because it's important and it's not... It's hard to piece this timeline together in your mind because it only exists as far as these pieces of arts. These pieces of art
are concerned.
Yeah, and
also there's like... It's like The Legend of Zelda. There's like three timelines.
Exactly.
Depending on, you know, what happens.
Yeah.
And what perspective you take it from.
Yeah.
But yes, let's look at it from the GNS timeline. Let's say that GNS has a part in the history of musical theater. That's the,
I mean,
the,
I think
timeline.
I think, and I would argue this even on a greater scale. I think the conception of musical theater as we know it starts with Gilbert and Sullivan.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, I would say it goes further back.
Okay, I could see that.
Yeah. But like, I would say it goes right back.
Yeah. To
but
the very beginning.
Right.
This is the contentious part. But if you start with Gilbert and Sullivan, so they're, we're talking, they collaborated 1871 kind of to 1896.
Yeah.
On operettas, I would say.
Yes. Yes. They'd worked, particularly W.S. Gilbert, he had worked on some other like sort of Victorian burlesques in those days. And they were both kind of sick of it because these were quite inane things. I mean, it's not, we're not talking Gypsy Rose Lee style burlesque here. It's much more like,
much
hey,
later. Yeah,
showing your ankles.
It's and things
silliness.
Like can-can and, you know, the beginning big dresses and kick lines.
Exactly. And, you know, seeing lots of gender bending and the commentary was there, but it was very broad.
And it's so, still the appeal is like sexy ladies in sexy dress of the era, but like we're not, you know, it feels like low art.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing, is they were there, it was pure entertainment.
Yeah.
It's weird. These things kind of come in waves, you know what I mean? Because they were created in a response to the ballad operas, which were really kind of early musicals where it's like you're mixing like songspiel stuff where you're mixing in music and text together. And so they kind of came as a response to that, as a much more lighthearted version of that.
There were opera comique at the time, which I'm terribly mispronouncing, but like Carmen and things like that, which is not comic opera, but is like human opera where it's not 100% tragic is really I think
exactly it's not grand opera, it's not French grand opera,
right?
And so what Gilbert and Sullivan decided to do was they were like, well, we're too intelligent for this, and we want to make much more of a commentary, so started making the light operas as kind of a form of satire, basically. And that's kind of prevalent in all of their works. They each make a commentary on some part of Victorian contemporary society. And Pirates is probably one of their most popular. I'd say Mikado.
Yeah, I would say Mikado
most popular.
I would say Pirates has seen the most longevity because Mikado has fallen into a very racist trap. And like, you know, wasn't the intent, but is racist, because everything has racist subtitled in it in that age.
Right, exactly. But I think it's one of their best by far.
Yeah,
it's absolutely,
absolutely
my favorite. And so they created the kind of Savoy operas called, because they were all premiered by Mr. Doyley Cart in the Savoy Opera House.
And there was an intent that these Savoy operas were, was like, this was going to be a more general term. Like there was a concept that there were going to be more of them, but Gilbert and Sullivan kind of defined their own era.
Yeah,
and so nowadays the Savoy operas kind of just refers to Gilbert and Sullivan operettas.
Absolutely. Yeah, they had the monopoly on that one completely. Yeah.
Meanwhile, kind of at the same time, you see the musical comedies in New York. We're talking turn of the last century.
Yeah.
They're very much a contemporaneous turn on the Victorian burlesques near the later age of...
I was going to say kind of including minstrel shows, which we've talked about before.
Kind of, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
It's like we're just predating some vaudeville stuff in the beginning of vaudeville.
Yeah.
And then a lot of like sexy ladies in skimpy dress, but like with a bit of a story, maybe, or a bunch of songs, or you know, people in blackface in the middle. You know, we're the shows from this era you wouldn't recognize. The shows from this era have not escaped the era, but it is a transitionary time that's kind of happening alongside the swell of these operettas. They're a little separate, but they become important together later.
Yeah. In the sense that because Dionysus' operettas were so good, sort of mm-hmm. such high quality, they made it across the pond. And people were totally here for them. And then we start bleeding a bit more into the Songspiel kind of idea.
Mm-hmm.
Talk a bit more about The Merry Widow, because I don't really understand how it fits in.
Yeah, it's...
To me, it's an opera.
It's, yeah. So The Merry Widow premiered in 1905 in Germany and then had its English translation in 1907. Is kind of on the coattails of this Gilbert and Sullivan trend. And there were plenty of others in America, too, that haven't stood the test of time that you don't hear about. But The Merry Widow is one that has made it out. I think partially because it had its big English premiere in England as opposed to New York. But The Merry Widow was a contemporary operetta, more contemporary than Gilbert and Sullivan. In that it is lighter fare, it is not tragic, no one dies, but is still sung, and the story is connected to the song. I do think, in talking about these things, I really think the missing piece for all these things, which I never concluded before, was dance, and mm-hmm. the thing that really makes the conjoined musical, the integrated musical theater, which we'll get to later, is the inclusion of dance in all these things.
Mm-hmm.
But The Merry Widow, you know, it's important to point out here because The Merry Widow has stood the test of time. It's like a thing you can call back to in your mind, and lives on this opera to operetta to musical comedy to musical theater spectrum in 1905-1907.
Mm-hmm. And then after that, we're starting to get into a bit more familiar territory.
Yeah.
Broadway's starting to be born here, where we have the Follies mm-hmm. and kind of the end of vaudeville.
Yeah. We do. It does feel like if we're like on the, I don't know, the smartness scale, like the highbrow, lowbrow scale, it feels a little bit like a pendulum swing back.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And, you know, that's been a good, like, 40 years that we've traveled on in this time.
Yeah.
So that's absolutely fine. And then the show that kind of changed everything, it'll have its own episode, obviously. But Showboat swam in.
1927.
Exactly. And in many ways was our first piece of musical theater.
Right. As opposed to, say, musical comedy.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I'm sure, you know, we'll spend 5 hours in it on a future episode.
Yeah.
But the idea is Showboat took the structure of what was then the musical comedy, but it felt inappropriate to call it a comedy.
Yeah.
And so then, you know, it's a revolution in the art form.
Completely. Completely it was. And it really acted as a turning point.
Yeah.
Inspiring... eventually, Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm. And I think it is important to say here, because our podcast has an international flair, mm-hmm. almost divergently, like at the mm-hmm. same time, the Three Penny Opera premiered a year later after Showboat in 1928.
Yep.
And they don't owe a lot of their genesis to the same ideas, like they're not mm-hmm. evolved from the same theater schools, but they happened around the same time.
Yeah, and so exactly.
It points to a changing society and a changing world landscape there.
Definitely. Well, I mean, if you know, you just have to look at what's happening at that time in the world mm-hmm. To understand why people would be wanting a change. You know, I mean, we're about to enter the World War II,
yeah.
So it's, you know, like we've talked about it a lot in the Throbbing Opera podcast, but people were on the fringe of thought here. So between Oklahoma Showboat, we did have quite a lot of big musical comedies, and a lot of light relief was happening again.
Yeah.
to cope with what was going on in the world.
It really does feel like a pendulum swinging back and forth, but like moving one direction.
Mm-hmm.
Is you have the, you know, ridiculously lowbrow Victorian burlesque sort of things, and then we swing in one direction towards Gilbert and Sullivan. You know, we're like, we're adding a little, you know, it's integrated plot a little bit, you know, we don't have ladies in skimpy dress. And then we swing back towards the musical comedies in New York, where it's, you know, girls, 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 and all these things and like legs. And then we swing back a little bit in the other direction with operetta like Merry Widow and like, you know, adding a little more plot than maybe Gilbert and Sullivan. And then we swing back the other way with the Follies and more girls, 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 but with a little more plot. And then we swing back the other way with Showboat and the Three Penny Opera. And then we swing back with the Great Depression and Anything Goes and Who the Heck Cares. And then finally we land on Oklahoma in 1943. Mm-hmm. And the rest is history, as they say.
Yes, exactamente. And to be honest, we're still swinging. We're still swinging that pendulum.
Yeah, yeah. But it does. It feels like it swings faster now.
Yeah, and it's much more of a rigorous structure.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So yeah, so that's the brief timeline of one of the interpretations of where musical theater is from.
It's the justification of why we're talking about Gilbert and Sullivan's Pirates of Penzance very clearly in operetta on our podcast, Jim and Tomic's Musical Theater Happy Hour.
Exactly, exactly. It's important to know where you have been.
Yes, yes, with yours my figures do agree. How quaint the ways of paradox and common sense she gaily mocks. Though counting in the usual way, yes, 21 I've been alive. Yet reckoning by my natal day, yet reckoning by my natal day, I am a little boy of five.
He is a little boy of five.
A paradox, a most ingenious paradox. That paradox.
Would you like to know a little bit about how pirates came to be?
I'm very excited to hear about this.
Excellent. Okie dokie. So let me tell you a tale of how pirates fought off pirating.
Yeah.
Yeah. So back in the 1800s, as you'll remember, as you recall.
When I was alive.
Yeah. Copyright laws pretty much didn't exist. Mm-hmm. Particularly international copyright laws. You know, for example, the work, you know, I write a musical here and I get it copyrighted here. That makes it safe that no one can across the pond can pinch it and make it their own.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? It's safe for me there. That didn't really exist in the 1800s. So a lot of Gilbert and Sullivan stuff, like we said, was very high quality. Was getting pirated all over the place, particularly HMS Pinafore, which is one of the first really, really big ones. And to even the point where when Gilbert and Sullivan themselves brought HMS Pinafore over to the States, it didn't do well because the US were already just sick of it. They were like,
What's this? Another Pinafore?
Exactly.
Who do these people think they are?
Yeah, we've seen this. You don't know any better. So what they decided to do is to bring their next show over to the States first to ensure its copyright there, which is why it had its premiere in the States. Mm-hmm. So the working title at the time was The Robbers, and I don't doubt for a second that was William Gilbert having some fun at the fact that everyone keeps stealing their stuff. And that's where the kind of inspiration for this show came from. But at that time, pirates were very in. Robert Louis Stevenson's Treasure Island had just been released.
Pirates is a literary character, not pirates as like actual pirates.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. But them as like a fun, you know, trope. It was very exciting. And critics would say like, oh, it's just HMS Pinafore, but on dry land. Mm-hmm. It was very different, actually. It's pirates, not sailors. Hugely different. So that's how it kind of arrived at the States, but its actual creation was an equal farce. Because they'd written some of it over by in the UK, but Sullivan, who apparently was a serial procrastinator, didn't bring over his Act One. So he just had to try and rewrite it from memory. Mm-hmm. And so that's why, like, Climbing Over Rocky Mountains has similar music to one of the songs in Thespis,
uh-huh.
which is the first thing that they did.
I think similar sells it very kindly.
Yeah, but it's the same. I can only imagine. So it was a bit rollicking. And then at 7 a.m., I don't know how specifically they knew that, but at 7 a.m. on the 28th of December, let us remember that it premiered on the 31st of December, it was finished and they took it straight into rehearsal. It's quite interesting. So they were quite passionate about using non-professionals in their shows because Gilbert was very controlling, basically a man after my own heart, and liked to take these people kind of from day one and do it his way. So here they had a bunch of non-actors or amateurs basically rehearsing for the show that was premiering in a day. Meanwhile, all the while this was going on, people are like listening at the door of the rehearsal space. All of the scripts and librettos are literally kept under lock and key because they don't want this to be pirated. They want this one to stay safe. Like, the cast are being offered bribes, the band were being offered bribes at all costs. Even though they had all these things in the safe, it was still pirated. Which I think is just hilarious that Pirates was finally pirated. And apparently it's because they had loads of basically copyists in the theatre watching it night after night after night and just writing everything down from memory when they got home. The first thing to get published in the States was, I think it was called, like, Recollections of the Pirates of Penzance, before the actual thing was published itself. But I think because they had had the performance there and they'd set up the tours so quickly as well, they kind of kept it alive.
It gives them a stronger, not even like legal backing, but like because they're also on the ground with anyone who's trying to pirate their material and perform it immediately,
exactly.
It lets them do it better, faster, because they did it first.
Yeah, exactly. I just can't imagine what that must have been like. Like,
right?
You could never have that happen today because,
yeah,
you know, of laws, but it's so... Yeah. It's so wild, do you know what I mean? It's so wild to me. It's very crazy.
It gives me, when I run into problems with licensing companies, or like when I hear the stories about like MTI or Sam French or whatever author being kind of, you know, shitty to some particular production, it's reassuring to know that by no means are we in like the knockdown, drag out, warring ages of Gilbert and Sullivan producing their new musical at the same time across the continent to like make sure they can solidify their copyright.
Exactly. So well done to the guys. Also, the musicians tried to mutiny halfway through, just keeping the pirate theme, because they decided that the score was just too big. So they were like, this is actually a grand opera, this isn't an operetta, we're not getting paid enough. I love it, though. Sullivan was really canny and was just like, well, that's fine if you feel like that, but I've got another orchestra just waiting on standby. I'll just call them and we can get them shipped over. and he told that story to the press and just obviously completely made it all up.
Right.
And they backed down and they were like, okay, cool, fair.
I do think, as much as Gilbert and Sullivan absolutely were fantastic authors, their businessmanship also has a very strong standing in their enduring popularity.
Yeah. I think they were just extremely intelligent men.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? They had their finger on all of the pulses.
They had it figured out. Because like they directed and music directed. It wasn't like they wrote this thing and passed it off to a bunch of people like the contemporary Broadway system. Like,
absolutely.
They saw it through.
And,
you know, My Confusion gets me, but whichever one conducted the opening performance of
Sully conducted
the opening performance of every single American tour, and like the, you know, They were with this piece of art in every detail.
Completely. They're fascinating men. It's, they're, like, their whole story, their whole lives are completely fascinating. I think it's a good point to wedge into the show notes, the movie Topsy Turvy, which is just a great film at the end of the day, but it's just, it's a really great way to kind of see their relationship. Like, they're almost opposite characters in many ways. And naturally, the relationship was really tumultuous.
Of course.
This was a, Pirates was a particularly rosy period for the most part, but, you know, they did have their issues. And that's a really, really great film that one and all should watch to experience the Gene Astor.
It'll help you stop getting them confused with Rodgers and Hammerstein.
Exactly. I mean, if you get them confused, that's bad. But yeah, I think, I don't know, I feel like you can start to get a sense of why they are as popular as they are. Do you know what I mean? Because it's, they've come from such a stock of strength. Do you know what I mean? There's not, they don't really make many mistakes. Not certainly till the end where they started to make flops. But I feel like that's just because the times were changing. Whereas, you know, in their heyday, they were doing some magical things. And like you say, to triumph across continents.
Yeah, that's huge.
Like, you haven't really seen that till Andrew Weber. Do you know what I mean? Like, he picked that up the second time. It's really, really impressive.
Yeah.
And their stuff is very high quality. Their lyrics and their music is extremely high quality.
Well, it lasts. It stands up. You know,
I mean, I performed Pirates in 2011 or whenever it was.
Yeah, like there are hundreds of thousands of shows between Pirates of Penzance and Oklahoma that no one will ever hear again because they're so poor in quality.
Yeah,
but like
exactly,
you know, Pirates of Penzance, as we've said, everyone knows, even if you don't know it, you know it.
Absolutely, and it is getting performed across the world.
Yeah,
at any given moment. Yeah. I mean, more so because it's been 100 years, so there's now no longer any copyright on it, so you can just do it.
But even, I mean, have you seen the contemporary trend of performing Pirates of Penzance with a Pirates of the Caribbean twist and making the Pirate King look like Captain Jack Sparrow?
I know.
Yeah, which, like, makes me vomit a little bit in my mouth, but, like, it stays. People go see it. People are excited to see it. Like, people who couldn't possibly have been Pirates of Penzance fans from the beginning because it's so freaking old.
Yeah,
go see it.
Exactly. And like, it's almost a safe bet, right?
Yeah,
it's almost a safe theatrical bet. Like, if I know a company is doing a GNS, I would be fine going to see it because you can't really mess up. Like, unless you've got a bunch of tone deaf people.
Even then, it's reached the point of, like, almost being godly that Shakespeare has. Where, like, even a really poor production still has this, like, deep feeling of tradition and literature to it that, like, keeps you from faulting it entirely.
Totally. And, like, because I've seen Pirates on a professional stage directed by you know, Mike Lee, who directed Topsy Turvy but is one of my favorite directors. Consequently, it wasn't actually very good. But then I've seen it, you know, in the Fringe, where there's like a cast of 12. In some ways, that was better. Do you know what I mean? And there's just there's so much you can do with it. Like, it's one of these shows, if you're a director, you can have so much fun because it is so ridiculous that you can just play around. And
it does feel like it's become bigger than it is, you know? Like, I don't know the best way to put this thought. Like, its popularity is bigger. It's not a revolutionary plot.
There are
better songs today than in this show, but because it's Pirates of Penzance, because it was so popular when it existed and then continued to remain so popular.
Yeah, totally.
Like, its reputation precedes it.
Yeah, exactly. By the way, I've worked out through the beauty of this podcast, exactly, that's one of the things I say all the time.
Exactly.
So I'm really sorry. But it's not going to stop.
If you've been taking a shot every time Jimmy says exactly, we're so sorry.
Yeah, the liver damage is real. but yeah, it's just really enjoyable. Like, I learned so much doing it. I learned so much. Like, see, just musically, because it's near opera.
Yeah.
You learn a lot about technical singing. Mm-hmm. And you learn a lot about consonants and the importance of consonants and held notes.
Yep.
Do you know what I mean? Like, just these simple things that, you know, a lot of contemporary musical theatre doesn't necessarily require.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? If you're doing, I don't know, if you're doing like Dear Evan Hansen, you don't really need to worry about your consonants too much because there ain't no patter song in Dear Evan Hansen.
Right, exactly.
Like, whereas if you don't watch your consonants and Patter's Penzance, then you're not going to understand anything.
Well, and it's interesting to me because we've seen it. You can draw the descent of this sort of impressiveness of this sort of thing, but like even the idea of a patter song.
Yeah.
You know, you look at something like Modern Major General where before it hits its first immediate reprise could demand a standing ovation.
Yeah.
And not because it's a funny song, but like in a difficult, convoluted sort of way.
Yeah.
It's not a terribly moving song. It's not a terribly like knee slapping kind of funny song.
Mm-hmm.
But the technical prowess required to execute the song is impressive. It's like watching someone run a marathon.
Yeah.
And like that, you know, drives you to stand up. And you see those things sort of happen on a descending scale through things like The Music Man or like, mm-hmm. you know, you see them pop up now and again as like homages, like direct homages in like Thoroughly Modern Millie.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But
like, even like Sondheim loves a patter song.
Exactly. But you know how many songs on Broadway right now are like about how technically difficult they are to execute in a live context.
Yeah.
I'd wager probably zero.
Yeah.
Like, there are beautiful songs and pretty songs and where, like, you clap for the performer and their wonderful interpretation of it. But, like, there's no song on Broadway right now where you're like, wow, you said all the words!
Yeah, exactly, Uh-huh.
And, like, you know, it's interesting to see that descent. There's not a particular reason to point to why. And I don't know how we got here, but...
Well, I feel like it's actually just difficult.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And to make it, you know, for something like Not Getting Married Today.
Yeah.
One of the best contemporary patter songs.
Yes, absolutely.
Like, to wedge all that plot in there.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And to keep it being funny.
Yeah.
That's really difficult.
That's really impressive.
Because that's the thing is, it's like, you couldn't have, like, a ballad patter song.
Right.
That wouldn't work. That would be odd.
Yeah.
That'd be very, very odd.
But even like, you know, Hamilton, the contemporary recreation of everything we love about musical theater,
mm-hmm.
it's patter songs we would probably more likely call rap or hip hop.
Yeah.
And like the impressiveness isn't so much in, you know, maybe something like Guns and Ships.
Uh-huh.
Maybe. But it's impressive for a slew of other reasons.
Yeah.
Only one of which is that it's a well-written patter song.
Yeah.
It's a trend that's dying.
Well, that's, I mean, like, in many ways, and this will sound stupid, but, like, in many ways, that's where rap came from. Like,
yeah.
It's saying words, saying smart words fast.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That's what it is.
Yeah. I mean, there's probably an argument to make that, like, Modern Major General is one of the first rap songs.
Let's do it.
Is really insulting to a bunch of, you know, cultural backgrounds. But, you know,
there's elements there.
There's some connection there. Yeah.
Literally, if you're Tom Lehrer.
All that to say, Gilbert and Sullivan, knowingly or not, really, they set us up. They set us up for success.
They did indeed. Absolutely. Thanks, chaps.
Tear it
Okay, so that was the Pirates of Penzance.
The Pirates of Penzance!
Have you ever done, you know, the warm-up, like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3,
4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3,
4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2,
3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2,
3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2,
3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2,
No, and yeah, but you know, it's insidious. We can't help. We can't get away from it. It's everywhere. Hey, are you ready for the Reddit rundown?
We got follow up. Reddit rundown, follow up.
I think we should make a like a jingle.
It's the Reddit rundown follow up. Is that bad? Good.
Let's do this. No, right. I'm gonna compose in my head.
Okay.
Run on down to the Reddit rundown. Yeah. To the Reddit rundown. Or come on down to the Reddit rundown.
You sing it and I'll go, yeah.
Yes, okay. No, I'm not. I've just got embarrassed by myself. I thought it might be fun, but it won't be. Excellent. So, we talked about this in the last podcast for Heathers. If you haven't listened to Heathers, go listen to Heathers.
And we're going to, our podcast, it's Jim and Tomic's Musical Theater Happy Hour, and we always run over, so we're going to try and speed through these.
Exactamundo. What are, Ian Thomas Mack said, what are the Jimmy and Tomic Musical Theater Happy Hour trash called?
I don't know. My trash is called mashed potatoes, but we need some trash.
Yeah, we need some trash. I need some trash. Give me some trash. In the UK we call it rubbish. So yeah, let us know. Answers in the back of a postcard, guys. Also, so we did it again. Tommy and I have this thing where every time we do a podcast we like wish something into existence,
and it so always happens.
It literally always happens. I can't remember off the top of my head the other ones, but it always happens. We wished Heathers into existence, so it's
EO_123 let us know. The Other Palace is doing a workshop of Heathers in England.
Exactly. We also had Saturn Police tell us loads about animatics. Apparently animatic is a like industry term.
Yeah, who knew?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it's storyboarding. And actually it makes sense because you see it quite a lot At the end of, see things like Pixar films?
Mm-hmm. And they're like, and all they're, the scenes they've cut?
And,
or
yeah,
like...
they're deleted scenes and stuff like that. They're these exact same animatic things.
Yeah. I wonder if it says something about the future of Heathers the Musical as like an animated movie, the fact that so many people feel gravitated to these animatics for it.
Yeah, exactly. So, well, because the first, what I remember that one of the first ones I ever saw was actually a Wicked one.
Yeah, that's very popular on YouTube.
Yeah, and I was like, oh my God, this is so good, and this would work perfectly as an animation. So it could happen. And, yeah, you know, and she was just, or he, she, Saturn, please, I don't, they were just saying that, like, a lot of their people are wanting to be professional storyboard artists.
And what a great way to start, by adapting these non-animated things into animated things.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactamundo. We also found out about gender bending production.
Yeah, ZY King and Sammy Elliott told us about this.
By the way, I really hope Sammy Elliott is actually just the actor Sam Elliott.
Probably. That seems,
I think,
likely.
I generally think it probably is. And
how do you feel about this gender bending production of Heathers?
I'm kind of fascinated by it. I mean, that's the joy of amateur theater, isn't it? Where you just do it, whatever the hell you want. You can,
right,
play.
Yeah.
And apparently it worked. Like, there's a whole Tumblr that we found out devoted to this production.
Well, of,
like,
course there is.
What the hell is Heathers? Like,
no, of course, you know, there is. I mean? There are whole Tumblrs dedicated to the guy who carries carrots in that one scene in the movie version of Les Mis. Like, of course.
No, but this is an amateur production. I mean, it is Berkeley, so it's good. But, like, yeah, it's baffling. But no, I really like the idea of it.
Yeah.
And it kind of calls into question a lot of other different themes. Do you know what I mean?
It's very interesting. Especially because there, you know, this is not like what's gender bent? JD's gender bent, and that's about it.
Yeah, exactly.
Are you gonna gender bend Kurt and Ram? Are, like, you know, probably not, but then, nope. There's, you know, even just questions of, like, all the gay slurs that happen throughout the thing, they gain a little bit more weight.
Yeah, exactly. So I think, yeah, so they kind of change that into things like, you know, like Waffle Muncher and,
right,
shit like that, apparently. Which, you know, I think is like, it does, and it, their relationship between Veronica and JD, It just brings a whole new light,
yeah,
onto this.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting in the in the perspective that, like, you know, you look at all the occurrences of school violence, whether it's school bombings or school shootings, that are perpetrated by male identifying people, men, mm-hmm, and, like, to then gender bend this into a female world, it makes you think and question a lot of things.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. So yeah, very, very fascinating. Now, the other thing, Thomas, I'm shining a light in your eyes, mate. So many people, but we had Her Royal Highness Queen Mab and Movie Dude 74, particularly.
Also royalty, probably.
Yeah. Call you out, Tommy.
I know, and it's because I went on such a rant in City, exactly, of Angels about the lyrics. And yep, there are crappy lyrics in Heathers. Absolutely, I will give you that. And this is something I've been sorting through, and I don't have a good answer for. I'm more okay with it in Heathers.
Right.
I'm more okay with it in a musical about vomiting up corn nuts than I am in a musical that kind of prides itself on, like, the film noir genre prides itself on wordplay and poetry more so than I think a campy 80s movie adaptation, certainly with darker tones. And there's, like, some elevation to the satire there, whereas, like, City of Angels is more of an homage than a satire, and for some reason that lets me excuse some more clumsy lyrics. And you're right, they're clumsy lyrics. And I don't know why I'm more okay with them, but I am.
Do you know why you're okay with them?
Because
everyone's allowed their own opinion, aren't they?
Yeah, I don't like giving myself that justification. I feel that's an easy way out. But,
well,
I don't know,
I think
I'm interested.
This will be your journey. This will be Tommy's journey.
Maybe. Yeah, because it's a thing, I don't bring it up as much, but I feel this way all the time in all sorts of musicals about lazy and less lazy lyrics. Mm-hmm. And like, did you give that phrase a second look over? There's not a better rhyme you can pull there, question mark. Mm-hmm. And I do, you know, I didn't bring it up in the Heathers podcast. I didn't mm-hmm. because it wasn't on my mind, but it was totally mm-hmm. on my mind in the City of Angels podcast.
Yeah. I think it's just because people are saying, because City of Angels, the standard of lyrics is so much higher mm-hmm. across the board.
Yeah.
To then laud something where the standard is so much lower.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing that people are having issues with. But
yeah. It's more so that like in City of Angels, it sticks out to me, and in Heathers, it didn't. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I pride myself on musical theater analysis. Mm-hmm. And those two things are incongruous with each other. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Who knows? But hey, the people are mad. The pitchforks are flying.
I'm sorry, mashed potatoes and whatever. Insert Jim and Tomic musical theater trash here.
Exactly. I thought maybe the alcoholics, but I don't know if that's a bit...
I don't know if we want to encourage that too much.
I guess. The alcoholics, no, doesn't work. Nah. Like jolly alcoholics, no.
We are not nearly as clever as the collective of all our listeners.
Absolutely. So that was the Reddit rundown.
Woo! Let us Hooray. Know if you like that, if you want us to do it next week.
So Tommy, do you want to know what we will be getting up to next week?
Absolutely.
Excellent. Well, I got a question for you, buddy. This musical that we'll be talking about is immensely funny from the get-go, but did you know many of its funniest moments developed from actor ad-libs and stage mishaps? Mm. So from accidentally throwing a coat across the stage onto a coat rack perfectly and getting a standing ovation, to being trapped on stage because of a malfunctioning door. What musical did this happen in?
That sounds hilarious, whatever it is.
I'm laughing.
I can hear it.
Ha 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 ha.
If you want to get in contact with us, I'm Musical Mash on Twitter or Musical Theater Mash on YouTube.
And I am Asen Hendrix on Twitter and YouTube. Or you can contact us on our joint Twitter account, Jim and Tomic.
Or check out our website, jimandtomic.com, which has a link to the Reddit discussion. And you know all about that already.
You do. We talk about it too much. Please tell your friends all about us. That would be fabulous. And we'll see you next week.
See you then. Bye-bye.
Ciao for now.
We go, and now we go.
Da-run-da-ra.
And now we go.
Ra, ra,
and now we
ra,
go.
Ra, 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 ra.
This is the end, and now we go. Of the podcast, and now we go.
Da-run-da-ra.
We go.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.